You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the Binge Aftertaste.
As you know, we've entered into a contract with the city to run local law enforcement. But at Security Concepts, we believe an efficient police force is only part of the solution. No, we need something more. We need a 24-hour-a-day police officer, a cop who doesn't need to eat or sleep, a cop with superior firepower and the reflexes to use it. Fellow executives, it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to the future of law enforcement.
My friends call me Murphy. You call me...
RoboCop. Who is he? RoboCop. What is he? RoboCop. Where does he come from?
Dead or Alive Binge listeners, you're coming with us to the Binge Movie Aftertaste RoboCop Retrospective Series.
Called for backup.
Join Garrett, Matt, and Batch as they watch and review all three films of the original RoboCop film series before finishing with the 2014 remake.
You have 20 seconds to comply.
Listen to this series of shows in which the hosts promise to serve the public trust by breaking down what went right and wrong with the tales of Alex Murphy making the Detroit streets a safer place.
Well, I guess we're going to be friends after all.
Richard. So bitches leave, as the adventure-seeking podcast listeners will be staying out of trouble by taking this journey to find out what Prime Directive 4 really consists of.
Though you may think you're having fun now, you only hurt the one you love.
Which is all brought to you courtesy of Binge Media.
Let's do this. Tin Man.
RoboCop 2, released June 22nd, 1990. Budget on this thing was $35 million. Box office, $45.7 million. And is directed by The Empire Strikes Back's own Irvin Kershner. We're back, boys, covering the RoboCop series, the RoboCop number 2. This will mark the halfway point of our retrospective. Batch, you were live around this time, unlike our other co-host, who
yes.
I think wasn't even thought of at this point. What was your first exposure to RoboCop 2?
Well, a little bit older, because this is, what, 1990?
Yep.
So I was definitely old enough to see this movie, unlike the first one. I like this one not as much as the first, better than the third. I liked it not just because RoboCop showed up at WCW to save Sting at the time. I have fond memories of this film.
Matt?
Much like the first one, I saw this one in college. I think I watched it the night after I watched the first one. I didn't marathon him or binge him, if you will.
Thanks for the plug.
Yeah, why not? That's why I'm here.
By adventure.
So you watched it, the first time you watched it was for that getting ready for the remake, correct?
Yeah, so we're talking, wow, that was 4 years ago at this point. Holy
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, 4 years ago.
That flies.
Really flies. This one, I think I watched it when it was on video. I wasn't in really a rush to watch it because obviously, like I said earlier, I liked the first one, but I wasn't a huge, huge fan of it at that time. So this one kind of flew under the radar, but I do remember, like, checking, I used to get the Leonard Maltin book. You guys remember that Leonard Maltin book that used to come out?
Oh, yeah.
It was like literally every single, I mean, I don't know if he still does it. I'm pretty sure he does. But those pages, every single year, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And at this point, there are like 790-something pages in this book.
It's probably an app now.
Oh,
or
an
e-book.
I was a, Yeah, ebook, exactly. Although I was in a Barnes & Noble a couple years ago. He still had the new revisions out there. But I remember looking at the RoboCop 2 thing and then looking and seeing, wait a minute, this guy's name looks very familiar, this director guy. And I go back and I look at Empire Strikes Back. I'm like, holy shit, it's the same director of that? And I remember renting it. I think I watched it with my best friend at the time, who we used to watch wrestling with, which we are going to cover a little bit of wrestling here in a little bit. But I remember watching it, and the way I felt then is pretty much the same exact way I feel now. So my feelings haven't really changed. I watched it again getting ready for the remake. That was the first time I watched it since. And then I watched it again for this particular podcast. I watched it twice. On the radar, but not too much, if that makes any sense.
When you went to that Barnes & Noble, you said that was a few years ago, right?
It was about 2 or 3 years ago, yeah.
So did you have to dust off some cobwebs and, you know, work your way at the back to find it? Was it the janitor
fucking
saying,
love Barnes & Noble, dude. These Barnes & Nobles, they have like a Starbucks in there, and I grab a book or a magazine, and I'll sit over there sometimes. And even if I'm like getting ready for one of these podcasts, I've been known to go to Barnes and Noble, sit, grab a book, and read about a movie or something that we're about ready to cover, or read biographies there. Like, I love going to Barnes and Noble. So go fuck yourself, sir.
What the fuck is what?
I hate to be a film snob. I go for the Criterions.
Yes, their Criterion collections are amazing. I completely agree with you, sir. So, when this movie was getting promoted, Ted Turner's WCW was probably about, what, 2-3 years old at that time. That was about the time he had bought it. Some ungodly reason, Ted Turner made a deal with Orion Pictures to have RoboCop 2 be promoted on the May pay-per-view Capital Combat.
Yep.
Where RoboCop came out to save Sting from the Horsemen after Sting was in a cage with Flair, or no, it was Luger who was in the cage, right? And RoboCop was there as the quote-unquote enforcer. Am I right on that?
I forget what the details of it. All I remember is Robo came out, broke open. Yeah, Sting was in the cage. I think the Horseman locked Sting in the cage. Robo came out, bent the bars, and Sid was angry in a tuxedo, but ultimately did nothing. And you know that was not Peter Weller in that fucking costume.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, that had to have been like one of the wrestlers or something, would be my guess.
Yeah.
I remember that very vividly. I remember watching that with a friend of mine, and I'm sitting there, and the guy I used to watch wrestling with all the time, and I'm watching it with him, and we're looking at each other. It's like, why is he so intimidated? Why are they so intimidated by this guy? Like, it's just, it was the most bizarre thing. People think wrestling today is crazy. WCW back in the 90s was ridiculous. Their in-ring product was usually pretty damn good. But the things that were going on outside, and then every once in a while they had these things like this RoboCop thing, and they had these this tag team called the Ding Dongs, where they had a bunch of bells on them. I don't know if anybody remembers that, those two guys. But
that was a Jim creation, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember Chucky. It was like 98 or so.
This is the same company that did a promotion that had Chucky feud with Rick Steiner.
Yes. I remember that very well. God damn it, Matt. Why didn't we cover that for our Chucky retrospective? Fuck.
I know, right? Well, all this wrestling, we were all closeted wrestling fans, I guess.
A better call batch. So you got a question, I come on for like 5 seconds, answer it, and then I fuck off.
That was how they promoted this. Now, I didn't see the pay-per-view live batch. I don't know if you did or not. Did you watch the pay-per-view live?
I watched it back. See, back in the day when you couldn't afford a pay-per-view, you had to watch the scramble to listen to it.
I remember that, but I also remember that when they did come out on video, and you go to Blockbuster Video to rent it, the pay-per-views on TV would be like three and a half hours long, but you get the tape, and the tape's like not even 2 hours fucking long. Like, they edit it to shit. Like, every match is like 3 minutes long.
The Tom Zenk Big Josh match ain't making the tape.
Yeah. So I remember just getting this thing, and I don't know, like, my point in bringing this up, and I don't mean to, like, you know, turn this into a wrestling podcast for the first 10 minutes, but what I remember is in the videotape that I got when I rented it, I didn't see any promotion for RoboCop 2 or anything, but I'm pretty sure on the pay-per-view, I'm guessing that they probably had a ton of promotion for it, would have been my guess. Like, they probably ran the trailer, and they probably interviewed somebody from it. That would have been my guess, because that's the kind of shit, those are the kind of deals that the wrestling promoters did back then.
Yep. Go watch it on the WWE Network, because they have all the pay-per-views, all the old WCW pay-per-views on there. Go watch the Capital Combat just for the RoboCop segment.
My point in bringing this up, though, is to just illustrate the promotion that RoboCop 2 had wasn't exactly great. This was their main promotion, and $47.8 million, especially back in 1990, is a good chunk of change, but that's barely cracking the budget of this film. I would assume that that would almost be considered a flop.
Now it would totally be.
Yeah. Oh, now nowadays, are you kidding? Like, you get run out of town. That covers the promotion of RoboCop 2. Now, Irvin Kershner, interesting choice to do a follow-up to a Paul Verhoeven film. 10 years before, he was directing Mark Hamill and a puppet running around a set that looked like another planet of Dagobah. And now he's doing a movie, RoboCop 2, which, for the most part, and we'll cover it when we get into it, is pretty mean-spirited. It has a few moments of heart, which I don't know if they really work. Why you would get this guy to do what the guy who did the most extreme commercial action film to come out probably ever, baffles my mind.
Was this his last movie?
Yes.
Yeah, this was his last movie. He lived until, what, 2010, 2011, something like that? Like, he had a really good life, but yeah, this was his last movie before he passed.
And I completely forgot that Frank Miller wrote this one and the next one.
Yes, Frank Miller. Let's talk about him now.
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, right? We have to, because the guy wrote this script, or at least he says he didn't. But at this time, when this movie was being made, boys, you know, the original writers, I don't think they're on this one. But what Matt, I don't know if you know this or not, but back in 1990, there was a huge writer's strike going on. All right? Huge. To the point where some stuff wasn't getting done and being produced. But RoboCop 2 was on a schedule. So they hired what they called, just like they did in football back in 87, they hired scab writers to write this script. They hired scabs. Frank Miller was a scab. All right? Covered the wound. And this was probably the beginning of his cult. Had he written Dark Knight Rises at this point? When did Dark Knight Rises, the comic, come out?
Well, Dark Knight Returns was 86. Or
Returns. Okay. So this was four years after that.
And he's already had his like famous run on Daredevil.
Okay, so Daredevil had already... Okay, so he was already a well-established writer at that point in comic books.
Oh, yeah. He was one of the biggest names in comics.
So I can kind of see where they're coming from when they want to follow up a Verhoeven movie like the first RoboCop with this guy who also has a weird aesthetic, has a weird view of things. But I don't know, man. I will never get Frank Miller. I will never get his appeal to people. I think the guy is a scumbag. I think he is pretty overrated. I think Dark Knight Returns is a good comic. I don't think it's a great comic. And I think it's something that this guy's cult baffles me.
Fan of the first one, didn't like the second or the third Dark Knight miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. The second one is one of the worst comics I've ever read. Yes. But this was also, Sin City came out the year after, so it's not like he kind of faded into obscurity after this, but I can see why they got him, considering much like RoboCop, Dark Knight Returns does certainly pull some interesting perspectives with how they use the news anchors their take on Reagan and kind of the Detroit we get in these RoboCop movies, particularly in the opening of 2, it kind of is like Gotham City where the freaks have taken over. This would not be the last movie he would do, because he had that, what's that piece of shit with Sam Jackson and...
The Spirit.
Oh, The Spirit. Spirit, that's right.
Well, this was a movie that turned him off Hollywood. This set of movies, we'll get into most of this next week, but it was the experience on RoboCop 3 that pretty much said, all right, fuck Hollywood, I'm done. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. And it was Robert Rodriguez, who I credit with a lot of good things in this business. I really do. I think he's done a lot of great things for independent film. But one of the things I will always curse him for is bringing Frank Miller back into the vernacular. Let's get into the film, boys. We're done talking about these assholes, and let's see what kind of film they came up with, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So we begin with a carjacking preventer ad, and right away we see them going through the same motions that Verhoeven did with all the newscasts and such. But I gotta say, these are lacking that edge. Right off the get-go, I'm seeing the lack of Verhoeven just really affect this film.
I hate to say it, but they topped out right at the beginning, because the first one is the quote-unquote best of all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Part of it's just because you got John Glover, who is one of my favorite character actors. I like his delivery a lot. Great actor. And I do like how they kind of you don't think it's an advertisement right away because it's not particularly framed as a commercial until you get the pan out of the car. So I like how you could very well see it being RoboCop stopping a bust at the beginning. So I like that kind of traversal, but it's not satirical in the way that Verhoeven did it. It doesn't have that much of an edge. It has a shock, no pun intended, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I popped when I saw John Glover too, because the first thing that came to my mind, hey, that's Lionel Luther from Smallville.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I know him too. But he had a big summer this summer because he was in this, and then he was also in Gremlins 2, which was the movie I was most looking forward to this summer, believe it or not. John Glover or not, this ad just lacks a lot for me. But you're right, Matt. This might be the best ad they do. Mm-hmm. So they do another set of newscasts. We have Lisa Gibbons back, and we get introduced to Nuke. And again, I'm going to say I think the satire here is gone. Nuke is in the vernacular now. We know what it is.
I had a headache because I was browbeaten so much.
Don't do drugs because drugs are bad, okay?
Oh, yeah. And this was right in that era, too. This was right in that Nancy Reagan era of, you know, telling kids, stay away, say no to drugs. I think it's trying a little too hard. The Nuke is a huge part of this movie. We'll get into it towards the end, but
the noise that Nuke makes when someone takes it got on my nerves after a while.
How the fuck are they taking it? Let's get to that right away. I have that in my notes for later on, but let's talk about that right now. Like, what are they doing?
You stick it in your neck, you squeeze it like one of those, like mush candies. And is it an upper? Is it a downer? Does it last, like, for literally, what, like 2 seconds?
Yeah, what the fuck are they doing? Like, it goes straight to your neck? That's supposed to feel good? That it goes to your bloodstream through your neck? I don't know what the hell is going on with this drug. I know it's supposed to be some kind of futuristic thing, but I'm looking at that and I'm like, okay, is that like a contacts case? Like, what exactly are they fucking doing with those things?
I thought it was a cassette tape case for a while.
So, Matt, here's our second retrospective in a row with a movie starring Tom Noonan playing Kane, the drug dealer here, head of a drug ring, a character not as, let's say he's not as nuanced as the Tooth Fairy was.
I think Tom Noonan's wasted. Sorry to jump the gun, but he's not given the juicy lines that Boddicker got. He's not given the personality. He's got a god complex, but it's not interesting because it doesn't come from a place of... We don't know his backstory at all, so it's just... he wants to be Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost a David Koresh feel.
Yeah,
They said it was a cult, but it never really came across as a cult.
We then get some Frank Miller-approved hookers in the movie. And this montage, boys. Montage. This is a really, really weird montage because we're seeing some jewelry get snatched off this dude. And then we get our first intro to this in this film to RoboCop. The action, it's big and loud, but I'm not really engaged, boys. As no characters here, come back later. They're just kind of blowing stuff up just to blow shit up. And where's my maniacal Boddicker when I need him?
Well, in terms of like setting the stage of how far that Detroit's actually fallen, like just starting off from like a homeless lady gets mugged, then the guy that mugs her gets beat up by two prostitutes. Like if this was shot in 2017, like they would all be fucking juggalos in Detroit at this point. But there's always a bigger fish. I think that's what they were just trying to show.
Well, speaking of RoboCop, can I mention one of my immediate problems with this movie?
Yeah, let's talk about RoboCop because I have a note on him too. But go ahead.
It's that in the first movie, you have the scene where he gets shot by about 20 people with automatic weapons when he's in that like parking lot. And in this, the first one, you could hurt RoboCop. In this one, he gets blown up in a car with an RPG and he gets out of the car just so they could pay homage, quote unquote, to the poster from the first one. Like the humanity that they tapped on at the end of the first one, it's gone completely in this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I do like how he still has the big sound effects when he's walking. Like they bring all that back. You know, I hadn't really watched this movie on a huge sound system like I did for this podcast, and the sound effects and everything are really good accompanying him. But that's a great point, Matt. I'm going to talk about his humanity here in a little bit. But let me just bring up: is it just me, or is he a different color this time?
He's blue.
Yeah. Why? Why change that metallic color that was beautiful in that first film?
I never realized it until watching it this time that he was blue in this one. He was silver in the last one. I don't like my RoboCop blue.
I don't blame you. And he's really blue in this. And I'm not just talking about the color. And then here's where we see the meanness of the film. There are babies screaming for help. Kane shoots a helpless woman out of her car. This movie is just plain nasty and mean. Like, they're just being mean for mean's sake. Like, there's no hint of that satire from last week. This is all, we're going to show these guys just be bastards and assholes and bitches, and you're going to hate them, and this is our way of telling a story. Fuck, do I hate that way of telling a story.
I love how Robo goes into stealth mode, sounding like a fucking tank walking around.
Well, to be fair, OCP did not put the proper cloaking device on him.
Nobody hears the thump, 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 but he locks the two guys in the fucking freezer.
Well, he left his WD-40 in the trunk of the car.
OCP is another one I have major issues with. I have major issues with this film, boys. I'm just going to go ahead and say. This film...
Is it just me, or does Robo have like a strut in this movie that he didn't have?
Yeah, I caught that too. It's weird. It's like he swivels or something.
He's got the Ric Flair like strut.
It's with the arms. It's the Vince McMahon strut with the arms.
No, I'm never going to be able to see that. We then see Nancy Allen's Lewis again as she takes out a couple thugs, and Robo then sets his sights on Hob, another villain of this movie. This point happens to be a child.
I like to call him Baby Boddicker.
He wishes. Now, this, Batch, I don't know if you remember the release of this movie, the media around this movie, the reviews of this movie. This was a huge bout of contention at the time the movie came out. I remember watching like Siskel and Ebert, and they were going out of their minds protesting the film because of how Hob is portrayed here. It's a 12-year-old kid who's just calling this chick a bitch, and he doesn't just, like, you know, step on people's toes or anything and kick them in the shins. Like, he is mowing people down with this fucking gun.
He's the Clarence Boddicker of this movie.
Yeah, with a terrible haircut. Boddicker had a better haircut, and he had no hair. This kid's hair makes him look like a fucking asshole, by the way.
How do we know it's a kid? He could have just been had that Jack reverse aging disease.
Oh, the Gary Coleman disease?
Yeah.
Jesus.
He could have been 42.
I hate this fucking kid, though. Not only because he's a bad actor, but again, that haircut. He just looks like a jackass.
Well, I just hate how this movie is so nihilistic, and it's almost like they don't realize it. It's almost like I got the sense that they were just trying to embrace the violence wholeheartedly and just trying to go to an 11, but the problem is they don't realize that there's no intellect to the kills. Like, in the first RoboCop, when people die, we can argue about whether or not it's overdone, but it's incredibly visceral, and it's shocking, but in kind of a provocative way. Mm-hmm. Here, people just get shot and fall over, and the fact that you have a 12-year-old kid, to be fair, this is coming off of a trend in the 80s where you were allowing your kids to curse in your movies, like, you know, Goonies, Monster Squad, Stand By Me. So this wasn't the first time it had been done, but it was the first time I could think of where they had this little shit of a kid mowing down people with a machine gun.
But the difference is those kids, they definitely, you know, I go to Bad News Bears as a reference, although that movie came out 14 years before this one. But, you know, those kids in Sandlot and things, they had dirty mouths, but never to the point where they're just like calling, you know, they're saying fucking bitch to this chick. And I'm not saying that as a prude. I'm just saying it as, I don't think it's good storytelling just to have them be this fucking mean without any real reason to it other than to show an asshole. And I don't want to see this kid die, but I don't want him on the screen.
I think, like, just the fact that Hob's a kid is just, like, a way for Frank Miller to, okay, the first movie, he had an interesting gang and henchmen. What can we do to make Kane have interesting gang and henchmen? Let's make this guy a rockabilly guy. We'll have a chick. We'll have a kid.
Well, to be fair to that point, Miller was brought on as a scab to revise the script, which, from what I heard, the first draft was just a fucking disaster. And when he came on, Hob was already in that script. So he didn't have anything to do with his addition. Now, did he have something to do with the way he does things? Maybe. But the character was already there. So after this fight with this kid, Murphy goes back to his house and gets some memories of him and his wife. Now, guys, when we left that last film, Robo, you know, says he's Murphy. He's trying to go human again. We see a lot of hints throughout the course of that movie of him wanting his humanity back. That's the kind of the sequel I was hoping for. I was hoping to find Murphy struggling with this, am I a robot? Or am I married to this woman? The inner dialogue in him. I'm watching this scene. He goes back to his house. He gets some memories. And then this is the stuff I love. And again, we hardly see any of it play out as he just looks like a fucking stalker. And this broad ends up suing OCP and they just leave it at that. What the fuck? this storyline is dropped. It's not the last storyline to be dropped in this movie, because this movie has a lot of them like that. But this is the shit I wanted to see play out in the sequel, and they don't fucking do it.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get much more of that the way they actually started this film.
Bad choice. Bad choice. God.
Maybe his kid was Hob.
At least that would have been a tie-in. That's not a bad point, Batch. Why not have his kid be hooked on Nuke? Why not have some kind of connection to this story? He goes to the house, the chick comes in, sees him, talks to them about suing the place, leaves, and that is the end of the story. And he looks out the window, sees her angry. That's the end. Fuck that.
Well, the whole legal action, because he's being sued, I guess, by the OCP is being sued by the wife. How is he being tried? Is he as a human, as a robot? Because why is OCP, that sleazebag attorney, why are they wasting all that time trying to convince RoboCop he's a machine? Because that's the whole case.
Great point.
I hate that fucking lawyer in this movie. I want to punch him in the
scum. Yeah, he's a scumbag. And not even for reasons. You know, it's not that I hate him just because he's the character. I hate him just because he's stupid.
Well, all the villains in this movie are one-note caricatures. I mean, it doesn't help that nothing's really written on the page for them. For one thing, this movie's not particularly quotable. It's not. The villains aren't fun to watch. They're not fun to watch. It's almost like you're wasting time. Because the big thing with even with going back to Nuke for a sec is that we don't get the sense that Nuke is really tearing the city apart. Because for a movie that's so centered on the drug war, there's not much of a war. Because there's no gang-on-gang action. There's no backstabbing of trying to get a supply. You have the whole supply and demand argument, but that goes nowhere. So, like what you were saying, Garrett, about dropped subplots, there's no forward momentum with anything that happens. And when there is, it's dropped at the drop of a hat.
There's just like OCP just leveraging the city by not paying the cops, causing them to go on strike so they can just build new Detroit.
Yes, new Detroit, which is going bankrupt, which, again, is pretty good foresight 20 years before it actually happens. We get another weird ad injected for no goddamn reason, and then we get reintroduced to Johnson. And more of the city takeover is explored as the real over-the-topness is explored here, which is the acting. Oh, is this fucking mayor character annoying? Wow.
Best worst mayor ever.
Oh, it's fucking awful. He is awful. I want him off the screen every time he's on. I mean, he's screaming every single fucking time he's on the screen. So we then get introduced to the real RoboCop 2, which is this terrible cyborg machine with TV screens for heads that always malfunction. I found this design to be odd. I like the Ed 209s and RoboCop in that first film because we can actually see the mechanisms work.
Yeah.
Here, I don't know what the fuck. Like, this is a big, it's a cool design, but I'm not seeing how this thing's working. It's just kind of moving around, and I don't see the mechanisms, and it kind of, you know, it's annoying to me.
I did like the emergency lights on the first one. I thought that was funny.
That was actually pretty funny. I'll agree with that.
I mentioned in the last one that the first one still really kind of holds up. This one, not so much.
Ooh, boy. Great point. So we then get a female OCP executive who promises she can get another cop turned robot to be a success like Murphy. And this is the start of the Hollywood feminist movement. Am I right about that? Maybe? I don't know. We then see a cop inject Nuke. And I've always found the way they were just kind of injected in their necks, again, way odd. There's... put it in their vein or take it a pill or fucking snort it for all I care. But what the fuck? Is this supposed to be the way of taking drugs in the future?
This made me laugh because he's just around the corner and just Robo just struts by.
Yeah. He doesn't actually...
and he's in his fucking uniform, which is a fucking stupid, stupid, stupid move.
You figure Robo would at least hear that. Is someone doing Nuke? Should have just stopped and looked around. And just continued to strut.
It doesn't help that I know that cop from Seinfeld.
Yeah, I know he's been in a lot of stuff. I didn't know he was on Seinfeld because I wasn't a big Seinfeld watcher.
But... yeah, he was in the one where Jerry's getting his kitchen remodeled and he keeps asking him questions.
So he wasn't a recurring character. He was just in one episode.
No, he was in one episode, but... it's funny. I watched that a couple days ago, so watching that back to back, I was like, oh, I've seen that guy, but he didn't do a whole lot of movies.
Robo and Lewis, they invade the arcade, And again, these action scenes, they're just doing nothing for me. As Hobb is choking Lewis out, which, again, this is how they're showing this kid be an asshole. They're showing him choke a girl out.
I think it's Miller's excuse to justify his misogyny.
You're not fucking wrong. Robo knocks Duffy around until he gets Kane's location from him.
Where is Cade?
I do love the cameo of the Ghostbusters arcade game in this scene. I used to play the shit out of that game as a kid.
And I love there was a... one of the arcade game in the background was called Nuke. No, it was Narc, where the drug in that game was Nuke.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, nice touch, guys. Robo makes his way to another warehouse, this one containing Hobb and his goons. And one thing that stands out in this scene is the score, which, you know, it was a huge part of the first film's appeal for me. I really enjoyed it, that first film. Here, I absolutely hate this score. It is deplorable. It's terrible.
I thought you were going to say the fact that this warehouse looks exactly like the one from the first one.
I thought that was it. Is this the toxic waste warehouse?
They shoot off Robo's hand and electrocute him, and Tom Noonan's performance here borders on terrible. Though this might be the material he's given. I'm not going to give him too much shit. The script.
I wonder if his character was a victim of rewrites.
I'm starting to think that because, as you pointed out earlier, one of you guys pointed it out, like there's no backstory given to him. So... I think he's trying to be like that soft-spoken cult hero that was really popular in the news back then, but there's none of that here, and I think you're right. I think rewrites, or maybe he just wasn't there to begin with.
He's just a drug dealer.
Absolutely. He's a fucking scumbag drug dealer. So RoboCop gets taken by a huge magnet and strapped down as Kane's thugs, again, beat the fuck out of him, as well as take away his leg, and he gets thrown out of a car, and this effect of him lying on the street is actually pretty cool.
I kind of looked at that as like homage to the first movie, but it's the reverse montage. So where the first one, we didn't really see him being put together. You just saw like the video. Whereas this one, they're disassembling him that way.
That's a good point, Batch, because this comes around about the same time as he gets destroyed in that first film, I believe. I'm sure if we put this thing side by side in a double screening, I'm pretty sure that would happen around the same exact time. So you might be right about that. It does bring up a question, though. Can Robo Murphy suffer the same amount of pain as Cop Murphy when he went against Boddicker's thugs? It's a scene that, again, is never really explored beyond this scene. The movie suffers because of it. How is he feeling pain, is my question. I never get that from him.
They say he is. Like, when they're doing the, like, diagnostics and stuff like that, he's writhing in pain, but I don't know.
It seems more intent on showing the debauchery of Hobb that Hobb is causing, you know, instead of like exploring this character. Again, I want character exploration. I know it's an action film. I know we want big time action scenes. We have a few of them. I haven't said they're great, but we've had some action scenes here. Why not explore the character a little bit more?
I could have used more rockabilly. What was his deal?
So Duffy gets stretchered to Kane and he gets tortured with a scalpel right on the chest. And there is a kind of a cool touch where he makes Hobb watch, but
yeah.
this is again, though, just for meanness purposes. Like, the writers, and I don't think it's Kirshner, I think it's the writers that just kind of, they want you to wince at this stuff, but I'm just kind of turning my head and coughing at this point because it's fucking, this movie is just, it's bad at this point, and I don't know if it gets much better. We then get introduced to the female scientist's weird plan of using convicted felons as street savers. But more
that's
on
a great idea.
Oh my God! We'll get more to this plot later. So Johnson heads to the old man and says that Fax is leaving. Fax is the girl who's has this brilliant idea. She's leaving Robo offline as the psychos get screened for use. All right, I said let's do it for later, but we're gonna do it right now. So guys, would this be a wise thing to do? Would you want a bunch of convicted felons saving you on the streets? Using a drug as the push to do the right thing. Like, is this a wise choice? What did she think was going to happen with this?
It is Detroit, so.
Yeah. To OCP, is how cost effective is it?
There has been a meeting with Johnson and the executives at OCP, and they all put pressure on Fax to program Robo to visit orphanages and be a role model. Now.
Or as I like to say, that's when he got his studio notes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's the marketing team.
Dude, interesting you guys said that. That is exactly in my notes. I should fucking take a screenshot. But the way this movie is marketed, I think, is being jabbed at here. Because despite all this movie's mean-spirited violence, this movie was marketed strictly for kids. And me and Batch were talking about before you came on the air, Matt. There was a cartoon at this time. There was arcade games. There were Nintendo games.
Action figures.
Action figures. I mean, the cartoon that had Murphy's death right there on the screen. Now, you didn't see anything that happened, obviously. It wasn't like a bloodshed or anything. But still, you know what happens just from watching the scene. Now, I haven't watched that cartoon since it was on, so I couldn't tell you if it holds up at all. I'm assuming not. Him trying to be so PC is kind of a shot at the marketing campaign, but I could be reading way too much into a script that doesn't deserve reading into.
I don't know. I think it's too blatant to be seen as anything but.
So Fax programs Robo to be free, tells him she's glad that they had this chance to dialogue, and right away he's much different. He's complimenting the beautiful morning and telling kids who invade a TV place to think of their parents.
That's something I did like, the Little League, the Little League scene.
The best gang in the movie.
I completely agree with that. This is stuff that really works for me. I like this stuff. I like the idea of an unpredictable reprogramming of Robo. But the execution of this plot, especially as, like, you know, I like when Robo's like reading the dead coach as Miranda writes. That's the dark humor that Verhoeven would do. You know what I'm saying? And I like that touch. But this plot lasts what? 10, 15 minutes. 10, 15 minutes at most. Why not make this the fucking movie and leave Nuke out of it?
There's like 300 directives in his head now as opposed to 4.
Yeah. That is interesting to me.
Which we thought we got rid of in the first movie, because at the end of the first movie, he gets rid of all his directives, right? No, that was this one, sorry.
That was this one, yeah. We're getting to that scene here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But speaking of things that got rid of, one of the more disappointing elements of this movie is the fact that Nancy Allen's character is a complete afterthought.
Oh. Mm-hmm. But I agree with that choice. I'm going to tell you why, because her acting's terrible in this movie.
Oh, she's worse here, don't get me wrong, but if you're going to do that, just pull an Alien 3 and kill her off.
I agree.
It's like her scenes got cut out.
I think her, like, when she's yelling at the OCP of doing something to him, all this stuff is really making me cringe. And here's the other thing they do to her too. Like, in the last film, she wasn't butch, quote unquote. You know, she didn't have like this feminine feel to her. Here, they have her hair teased up. They have her being more feminine, and it doesn't work for the character. Like, this character, again, as you say, she's an afterthought because she's hardly in this fucking movie. And when she is, she's not fun to watch because her scenes... And it brings up an interesting question, too. Why does RoboCop need a fucking partner? He doesn't need a partner. They're only doing this to bring these two back together.
Mm-hmm.
When she was used minimally, I thought she was fine. But here, she's used minimally, but her scenes are... She has such extreme reactions to everything going on. I fucking hate her every time she's on screen.
It'd be one thing if, like, Robo's partner was, like, the comic relief. But it's not even that.
So Robo's shooting up a wall, telling a guy to quit smoking, and then he gets "kick me" written on his back.
She did not have the time to write all that. Like, that is a continuity error of the highest order.
The police force, they find out exactly what OCP is doing, and Robo, here's where the plot point stops. He goes to an electric panel and he erases the entire overture that was put into his programming.
Within 2 seconds of saying, "Yeah, just a jolt of electricity, I got this."
What is happening, guys? What is happening in this movie?
It gets worse because then the cops carry him out like a Christ figure.
Oh, bringing that metaphor back.
Then Robo does his, "Are we cops? Let's go fuck those guys up."
It's yet another interesting plot point in this movie. I found this stuff with him as the fish out of water kind of fascinating. Again, all this reprogramming makes him unpredictable. So why get rid of the only real interesting plot point you have in this movie after you fucking dissolve that other plot point with his wife? It makes no fucking sense to me. None. So the cops head to another warehouse. Yet another warehouse.
Where are they finding these abandoned warehouses? It's like...
If the city wanted to save money, they should just sell all this warehouse land to OCP.
It's like the Saw movies. Where does Jigsaw keep finding these abandoned Home Depots to build these death traps in?
Detroit is 3 blocks with 5 miles of warehouses surrounding it.
5 miles of warehouses.
I've been giving this movie a lot of shit, which it deserves. But I'm going to say, I do really like the shot of Robo shooting the sniper right in the eye.
That was good.
I thought that was a pretty cool shot. Probably the only time I'll say love in this podcast. I did love that shot. I thought it was really cool. But Hob is hanging around this hot-looking black chick. Are these two together? Is that what we're supposed to take out of these two? Or is this chick with Kane?
She's with Kane.
Okay, so why is she hanging around this little brat?
Because he's the second smartest guy in the gang, evidently. I'm telling you, he's 47. He's not 12.
Maybe the nuke like slowed his aging process.
That would have been interesting, actually, now that I think about it.
See, we're writing a better movie.
Yeah, we're writing a much better movie than this piece of shit gave us. Robo being on the truck as Kane's driving, it put the movie down, but I'm going to bring it back up again. I find these pretty nifty set of shots. I like how he punches through the window and gets taken out by a post, followed by him getting on a motorcycle and using it to jump through the window and capture Kane. Not Raiders of the Lost Ark quality as far as truck chase goes, but good stuff nonetheless. I like this action scene a lot.
That scene is only in there to sell RoboCop and motorcycle toys.
You're definitely not wrong. So we then get an ad for Sunblock 2000. Are these ads working for you guys?
No, this one's the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. Oh,
they're really bad, aren't they? What was it about that first film that made those ads work? I'm trying to get my head around it. I know we didn't really like the nuke one. We found that to be kind of weird. But what was it about the spirit of that movie that made those ads work?
I think because it was tied into the whole idea of criticizing Reaganomics and the unfortunate mixture of corporate with rural civilian life and how it was kind of like bleeding into one another. Here it's just making social comments without any sort of context, because the ozone, the whole genesis of the sunblock is that the ozone layer has completely evaporated by the time this movie takes place, which is bullshit because people are standing out in the sun all day and I don't see them looking like the Navi from Avatar.
So I'll ask another question. With Kane now, this fax chick, she's going to walk in and she's going to kill Kane in this room so that she can get her plan going. Is she the villain of this movie? Or is it the old man? Who is or is it Kane?
It's Frank Miller.
It's Frank Miller.
Well, he is the guy that makes the nuke. We didn't even talk about that. That Frank Miller cameo in this movie as the scientist.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I did skim over that. So we see the operation to withdraw Kane's brain. This stuff with the eyes and brains in a tank looks like it wants to be some weird, grotesque creation. But it just comes off as silly. To coin a phrase from Michael, Matt, from our past retrospective, it's really silly to me to see this thing in this tank just looking at us. And I'm like, that looks like it belongs on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It would have been a much better film if they did go the route where his son gets hooked on Nuke. And they actually made Clarence Boddicker the RoboCop too. Like, if they follow the thread where she's just trying to use criminals, they have Boddicker's body. Why doesn't ODCP just use Boddicker? So that way it would tie more to the first film.
You'd have to rejuvenate his brain.
Here's actually what you do. And I just thought of this, Batch, as you bring that up. You kill Hob early in the film. You make Hob the big robot because you put him in that suit. You're going to want him to die because now he's big old robot and now he's going to be the danger to society and you want him to die. That would be the way to go. To put this 2-bit drug dealer and cult leader in this fucking contraption makes no sense to me. None.
The one thing I did like that he did with Hob is that he does do the power play the second that Kane's dead. Like, he does make the deal to with the mayor to bail out the city. And he's wearing the suit shit. And
Yeah.
He's the second smartest guy in this gang.
Yeah, I did like that. We'll get to that scene here in a little bit. But yeah, he is the one who gets that meeting going, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So we then see a PlayStation 1 version of Kane on the TV screen located on a suit.
That's generous. That was like an Atari Jaguar version of Kane.
I'm trying to think of my mindset back then. Was this cool back then? Like, would this have been cool to look at? Or even, like, back then, would we have looked at it and said, ah, fuck, this is stupid?
It was very Lawnmower Man. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, Lawnmower Man would come out 2 years later, 3 years later. And I agree with that assessment. But I'm trying to think here. Would we have liked this? Like, I don't even know. I don't know if I ever liked this whole thing. And he's not even talking in this thing. That's the worst part about this fucking... Well, there are a lot of bad parts. But another really bad part. He doesn't fucking talk. All he does is roar. Why is he roaring in this fucking thing? He's Arnold. There you go.
Hey, easy.
I am RoboCop 2.
This is bullshit.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Thaxton sends him off on an errand for which she will reward him with Nuke. And then we see the meeting that Batch was just talking about between Hob and this Mayor Cusack, which is for a deal of $50 million in order to do what again? To have permission to sell Nuke on the street? Is that what this meeting's about?
So he was going to bail out the city, but then they got to do Nuke. They were going to let them sell Nuke because they weren't really hurting anyone but themselves, and they were going to employ so many people and yada, yada, yada. He was creating a job. That's what Hob's doing.
It would have been nice if we saw that instead of them telling us, because we don't see Nuke tearing apart this city or the effect it's having on the youth outside of Hob. He's the figurehead, so to speak, but we don't see him take it. He's just the distributor.
Yeah. Mm. Where the fuck do you get a truck with like gold bars and all that fucking money?
From the set of Die Hard 3?
Yeah, just looking around.
Kane invades the meeting and takes out this entire clan, including this black chick, in an unbelievably brutal way. As she recognizes him, she tries sweet-talking him. She caresses his claw, which I never thought I would say that phrase in my life.
She was going to suck his robot dick.
I mean, she's just like, I can make this work. Let's go with this. Then he picks her up, twists her neck, and fucking drops her. Why was he so upset at this bitch?
He just wants his Nuke. He's jonesing.
Is that what it is? Is that what he was sent to do, was to kill this chick?
Well, his prime directive was lazy screenwriting.
Cusack gets away, but Hob does not, as he ends up dying in Robo's presence. Did we really need this kid to have a death like this, of him like claiming to be cold and begging Robo to not leave him alone as he dies?
It would have been funny if RoboCop asphyxiated him with a bag of money.
I mean, seriously, though, is this warranted for this kid who's been just a complete jackass in this entire fucking movie?
He should have just been talking shit to Robo as he was dying. Robo, go fuck yourself.
Here's the only spot where I actually see the heart that Kirshner was displaying in Empire kind of come out a little bit. He wants us to empathize with this kid. But again, you wanted us to empathize with him. Tear him up and have him be that goddamn RoboCop 2. Don't have him die like this and say, I really sucks dying. Like, don't have that fucking scene with this kid. You put him in that fucking suit and we want Robo to kill him.
I'd rather him go out like a boss with a big ass fucking gun trying to fire a cane than get blown away. Give us a good death with this character. I don't know.
So let's not. Oh, by the way, you guys remember Lewis? She's in this movie.
Oh, hi, Lewis.
Well, speaking of which, remember RoboCop is in this movie.
Well, RoboCop finally had his scene where he watched Hob die. So he's in this movie too. Yeah, remember him? But we then get the climactic end of the film as the old man calls a press conference and shows how Kane can be used as a tool with Nuke at the helm.
All he has to do is lift the power of the urn.
God damn.
Okay, I got to talk about this press conference. Did you guys notice, with all those empty seats, they make the one guy in the fucking wheelchair sit at the goddamn back in the opposite direction? I laughed so hard. There's one guy with a camera just holding it up just because he's so fucking far away. There's no wheelchair access in this fucking thing. Oh, I just laughed so hard. Everyone's sitting in one end. He's sitting in the other fucking side of the building.
Oh, my God. I never noticed that. Never noticed that.
Back and watch it. It's so funny.
So Kane goes a little crazy, but Robo has other plans as he brings Boddicker's gun to the meeting. And
but it's okay. It's not armed.
Yeah. And we get a stop motion battle to the end between these two. I'll say I find this fight, I think the fight's kind of entertaining. I like the sound effects. You know, these sound effects just kind of blew my speakers apart. I liked them a lot. But like most of the action in this film, I just have zero invested. At this point, I kind of wanted the movie to end. In a pretty cool scene, Robo shoots an elevator. It looks kind of bad effects-wise as Robo's hanging from the building, pulls Kane down with him, and at the bottom, Kane is throwing him around like a fucking rag doll until Robo moves Kane's laser to a gas pipe and blows him up. But that's not all, boys. Kane is not done as he emerges from the underground, blows up a few police cars before Lewis, again, remember her? She rams Kane with a tank in a completely useless scene because it doesn't affect him at all, and he just kind of throws it off. And it takes a while for him to actually throw that fucking tank off. Like, what is that? They're desperate to find something for her to do. Desperate.
I think they realize that we haven't had Lewis do anything in a while. Oh, let's just put her in a tank.
Robo then grabs some Nuke, and as Lewis tempts him with it, he grabs it as Robo jumps on top of him. And in a series of movements that, again, look pretty bad effects-wise, they wrestle around until Robo grabs his brain and smashes it into the ground. As a teenager, I'm watching this fucking thing, and he's smashing his brain. That always kind of made me queasy as a kid, like watching that brain just kind of mash into the fucking ground. That was sickening to me.
I love how he just suddenly finds the one weak spot in King.
Well, he's literally, he's a video game boss. You have to hit him in that one spot.
Three times, and then you're done.
So the movie then just kind of suddenly ends as the brain trust behind OCP. They opt to get Fax in trouble for what's happened. So after all this shit, and we haven't really talked about the old man in this movie, guys.
Yeah.
But the old man, in the first movie, I didn't find him to be a bad guy. I think he was just kind of enabling it in a way, but without him knowing. Here, are they trying to make him a bad guy? Because he comes off as a complete asshole.
I'm suddenly missing Dick Jones.
No shit. And this is the same guy from that first film. The same guy. Same guy that was Grig in The Last Starfighter. This is that same fucking guy.
He was Colonel Cochran from Halloween 3.
Yes, he was Colonel Cochran in Halloween 3. I was going to bring that up too, Matt. Same exact dude. But he's a completely different character. It's weird.
So we blame the girl? Yeah, let's just blame the girl.
Yeah, exactly. So the old man's not going to get fucking... He's not going to get in trouble because they're just going to put all the blame on the girl. That's the end of these two. Like, that's all we see. Like, what a fucking cynical goddamn ending.
I love how he just steps over the dead person.
That was a nice touch. Robo then declares, after Lewis is complaining that they're getting away scot-free, Robo declares that they're only human, as credits finally fucking roll in this movie.
It would have been better if Robo just goes, what can you do?
What a weird way to end the film, right, boys? I mean, again, Scabs wrote this fucking movie, so it's not going to make a bit of sense, but weird. That's the end of RoboCop 2. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this nice piece of cinematic history? I want to go to Batch first.
I give it a 6 blue-tinted RoboCocks.
Wait a second. Back up.
Yeah.
A 6. Now,
A 6.
You have been right with me and Matthew over here, completely lambasting this film for an hour straight, and you're going to give it a 6 that's more than a 5, which makes it on the positive end. Verily, but it's on the positive end. Why are you giving this a 6?
I don't know. It's one of those, I saw it when it first came out. Maybe a little bit of nostalgia is kind of tinting my better judgment. It doesn't really hold up, so I take a lot away from that. But at the same day, it's still Robo. I don't know. Okay, 5. I'll give it a 5.
All right. So much like you did to me last week, much like you did to me last week, I kind of convinced you to move that rating down a bit. All right. Matt.
My prime directive is to tear this movie a new one because it is ugly, cynical, nihilistic, heinous, reprehensible garbage. On a story perspective, on a writing perspective, I will say Peter Weller, still good as always. The movements are a little bit more pronounced, to put it politely, but I still think he's fine in the role. The problem is Murphy / RoboCop is a complete afterthought in his own movie in favor of a corporate takeover story that doesn't bear much weight or much satire. It's in your face and it's just inherently schlocky. It's put together like a 5-year-old. I mean, granted, this movie probably went a first script that was deemed unfilmable, apparently. So if this is what the filmable version was, then I almost don't even want to turn the front page of that script. I'm going to give it 3 out of 10 tombstone pile drivers. Which is how many it took for Undertaker to beat Kane at WrestleMania 14.
Stop. Looking at this movie, the script is an unbearable mess. I mean, this script is all over the place. There are plot points that are dropped at just the slightest instant. They don't do it. They're more concentrated on Kane and Hobb and their gang and what they're doing. Nobody gives a shit. Boddicker was an interesting villain because not only did Kurtwood Smith have just unbelievably funny charisma as that character, it was also interesting to see what him and Jones were concocting as we moved forward in that movie. I don't care about this drug. I don't care about these characters. And Weller, I know they had to really convince Weller to come back because Weller was saying no. He eventually says no next week, but here he's saying no. They added a 0 to his check, as he says. That made him come back. He should have fucking stayed away. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the biggest Weller fan. At this point, he'd done, between RoboCop and this, he'd done Leviathan, which is kind of a guilty pleasure, I'll go ahead and admit, but it's not like a, you know, it's a terrible film. For a guy who wants so bad to act, be an actor, he's just being RoboCop, and he's barely in his own fucking movie. So this is an easy 3 out of 10 for me as well.
It's ugly. It's mean. I hate saying this because I really wanted to. The fact that this is Irvin Kershner's last film just depresses me because this is the guy who made The Empire Strikes fucking Back, guys.
Yeah.
And to go out on this note, you could have at least made one other film. I hate the fact that I'm tearing this movie a new one, but I don't think it's all his fault. I think these scavs who came in, Frank Miller included, he can blame the studio all he wants, but his name is still on this thing. I think RoboCop only works when you have Verhoeven at the helm. Might see that more in the next couple weeks. This is an easy 3 out of 10 for me. Just stay away from it. All right, guys, that does it for RoboCop 2. Boy, I'm sweating after this podcast. I did a lot of yelling in this podcast.
They're only going to get better, right?
Well, I'm going to make a case for one of them. I'm not going to say which one, but one of them I definitely hold in. I'm not going to say high regard. I kind of find its reputation to be unfair, but we'll get to that. How are you guys feeling heading into next week? Matt, do you remember next week's movie at all?
No, because I've only seen 3 and the remake once. So hopefully, who knows, maybe my opinion will change.
Batch, how much do you remember next week's movie?
I think I've only seen the third one once, so it's going to be interesting to say the least.
I've probably seen it the least out of these few films, and that includes 2014's remake. So does that say what I feel about it? We'll find out next week, but it's a movie I don't have high memories of, but I'm looking forward to see the evolution of the character next week, and plus we're getting a new actor in the suit. So this is Peter Weller's swan song as RoboCop, and boy, it couldn't have gone better for him, couldn't it? And that does it for RoboCop 2. Guys, I appreciate you coming on. Been a fun podcast. I think this has been a really, really good addition to this retrospective. I've enjoyed doing this with you guys.
Always a pleasure.
And until next week, I think I've got to go deep the program. Thanks, boys.
I'm going to get me some nuke.
Do you consider yourself human? I require an answer.
Stop, babe.
Can't shoot a kid, can you, fucker?
They'll fix you. They fixed everything.
Thank you for not smoking.
Bitches leave.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
New Japan? Is that like a part of WWE or?
No. It's the second biggest company in the world. So New Japan Pro Wrestling, Jericho basically showed up to challenge Kenny Omega, who a lot of people consider to be the best worker in the business right now.
Oh. Hey, Matt, we were just doing the WrestleCast. You interrupted. So we'll call back in about an hour and a half and we should be able to catch on. How's that? I'm just fucking kidding. Complete dead silence when he fucking gets on the line.
That's not a thing.
You just made the list.
Attaboy. Are we going to be best friends now, Matt?
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Okay, hit record.
Yeah, hit record. Yeah, go ahead and do a backup just in case. You guys are both sounding pretty good right now. Matt, do a testing real quick.
All right, test 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, you guys both sound really good. What are you guys wearing right now? No, I'm just kidding.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Go watch it on the WWE Network because they have all the pay-per-views, all the old WCW pay-per-views on there. Go watch the Capital Combat just for the RoboCop segment.
You guys have been trying to get me to get that for the past 5 years. It's not working, Batch.
Well, since you bring up the whole video store, the tapes, they just literally put up a whole bunch of old Coliseum videos from the 80s.
Oh, no kidding.
Tapes on the network. So all that old stuff's there now. But all right, we're talking RoboCop.
Yeah, we're talking RoboCop. Yeah, enough of the wrestling talk because we're going to probably get chewed up for this. So, yeah.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Batch, were you about ready to say something? I saw your thing.
Oh, there. No, I was just laughing at your point.
Oh.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Where is Cade? That's the only catch. That's the only quotable thing in
this
movie.
Cade is here, Undertaker.
Let's not do any more fucking wrestling references. Jesus Christ. That was fucking great, though. That was really good.
Points.
Yeah.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Like most of the action in this film, I just have zero invested. At this point, I kind of wanted the movie to end.
I do like the fact that Robo's actually smart and that fucking Jimmy Superfly Snuka's plancha that he fucking dives off the truck. I popped
with
that.
Stop with the wrestling references. Stop!
I can't. He did a plancha!
I'd buy that for a dollar.
So we blame the girl? Yeah, let's just blame the girl.
Yeah, exactly. So, I just call him Cochran. So the old man's not...
I'd buy that for a dollar.
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget...
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob Odegirl.